Obviously, his pop career wasn't that bad at all. 750 million albums sold, 13 American number ones, 13 Grammy Awards and 50 chart hits. And earlier this month, an RTE radio documentary, Michael Jackson's Irish Driver, scooped gold at the PPI Radio Awards.
Time was passing and people were getting more curious. So who's that lad in the black coat there with the hat, you know? And a delivery guy came in. And he says to the owner, Breda, behind the counter, he says, "Is that Michael Jackson over there?" But this woman only found out 2 hours ago that Michael Jackson was coming here. As calm as day, this is what she says. "Not at all," she says. "That's just a fella from Tullamore that dresses up as Michael Jackson, and we don't pass any remarks on him. We let him do whatever he wants to do." And the delivery guy goes, "Yeah, I was thinking, so what would Michael Jackson be doing here in Tullamore?"
It would have seemed incredible back then in 2006. But the man seen that day in Jumpin' Jack's Play Centre in Tullamore was indeed Michael Jackson, the King of Pop.
And the documentary was narrated and produced by Ken Sweeney, who is the showbiz editor of the Irish Sun and who joins us right now in studio. Hi, Ken.
How are you doing, Shane?
How are you?
Not too bad. Nice to see you like, at a normal hour. I normally hear you on the radio very early in the morning.
So. Oh, sure. Listen, that's where they keep me. They keep me in the dungeon locked up in the mornings. But every now and again, I get to escape. And it's great to have you here. It's like the fox in the hen house.
It is. Yeah, here we are. Here we
normally
are.
Normally, you're digging around looking for stories.
I've spent my life upsetting people in RTE and then I win an award for RTE.
How I'm sitting at the RTE table at the PPI Awards.
There was some confusion in the RTE bus when I was coming down to the radio awards. What's this guy from the Sun doing on
you
the bus?
You better explain the RTE bus.
There was a bus to bring, there was terrible traffic going down to the radio awards in Kilkenny last week, and they put on a bus and we got down there eventually. If only Michael Jackson's driver had been driving, we would have got down there in record time.
He did sound like a nice fella. We're going to talk about that. So the buses, because they don't stay overnight, they just go down and do the awards
and then they come back
and then the bus comes back with bleary eyed people on it. But fun and games. Why did you want to make this documentary? How did that come about? Where did the idea come about?
My dear dad passed away last year, and I just wanted to do something more with life. I mean, I've done a few things. I worked in the BBC originally, in the film archives of the BBC. I was an indie musician. I made records, and then because the only people that liked my music were journalists, I ended up being a journalist.
And so you didn't go to college and do a course and become a journalist?
When I left school, I worked in an ad agency called Wilson Hartnell, and I went to Rathmines at night and I studied copywriting. But then, like a lot of people, I left Ireland in the early 90s and went over to London to Ealing, and I had a kind of another life over there. Like a lot of people, I think if you're in your 20s, I think you need to be going out into the world, America. And you know the best thing about that? When you come back, Ireland, you can just appreciate it that little bit more. So I did that, came back to Ireland in the late 90s, and then I got into journalism. I did a kind of CD-ROM magazine with a friend, Niall Austin, and then through that, it was a weird concept, a CD-ROM magazine. What is that exactly? It was like filmed interviews on a disc, very much ahead of its time because the internet was very slow at that point. And at that stage, I was kind of meeting print people, and I got into the Herald as one of their social diarists, and I got into entertainment journalism. The Star was setting up a Sunday paper, got into that. Then I left after the Sunday Tribune, and then the Irish Independent for 4 or 5 years, and now I'm currently on the Herald, and I'm currently in the Sun. In fact, the only magazine I haven't worked for a paper is the Sacred Heart Messenger, but there's always time.
You still have time. How successful was the music career in London?
Well, it was
good. What was the name of the band?
Yeah, the band was called Brian, but it was a guy's name.
Brian.
Like, it was named after the bass player in the Blades, I always say, which was very, like, that, those kind of names. Like, bands had ridiculous Orchestra Maneuvers in the Dark, and that was one of these kind of very indie names, Brian. So, and there was a link to the Blades, who I loved growing up and stuff. So I did music. I did sad music. The music I did at the start was very sad. People liked it a lot. And then, Shay, I got happy and no one liked the music. So I thought, well, it still got a market.
Did I not hear somewhere, somebody when they were gossiping about you for a change, that you were the BBC Single of the Week?
I was. Turn Your Lights On in 99 was Single of the Week, and it was nominated for an Irish Music Award. You know, it's a
great
thing. The second album was done in the Cocteau Twin Studio. Guys from the High Llamas playing on it, and I went out playing live with some of the guys from the Divine Comedy, who were very, very kind to back me. Great thing about it is, Shay,
was the single good though?
The single was, it was radio friendly.
Let's people judge it for themselves. Over hills, I'm back over town. In a city, hidden by clouds. Wrapped in sheets, asleep in your bed. With a thought, loose in your head. Across the universe. I could have see myself dancing to that Fela or something like that. Very of its time, the last. That's you singing, isn't it?
It is me singing. But the wonderful thing is, Shay, rather than maybe going through a traditional route into journalism, I went in as a musician and in a band that sold about 3 records. And when I used to, when I started off as a journalist, when I'd ring up, and there's a lot of people in RTÉ who would remember the band, so they don't think of me as some guy from a newspaper. I mean, that's that band Brian, and it's Brian and Ken, and it just gives you a different kind of an identity. And also when I broke into journalism in my mid-30s, I just was very, very not ambitious but hardworking. And you know, at some stage, you know, people in their 30s maybe can be a bit kind of laid back, but I was just loving it, and I still love it. It's a very exciting job. And I suppose getting back to the documentary, I did an excellent course RTÉ ran in here, a Doc on One course, where RTÉ have won awards all over the world. For the country at the size of this, and for RTÉ, they win awards all over the place for documentaries. They're absolutely fantastic. I did a documentary makers course in RTÉ.
This course was open to who?
Open to everybody. In fact, there was a lot of people from RTÉ, but a lot of people of all ages. It was run over a weekend in here, and I went to that. And I suppose being a journalist, I was very good at pitching ideas, because, you know, if you're a journalist and you go up to the news desk in the morning, you've got to sell a story, like in a sentence. You know, best stories are the easiest ones. The best stories are the easiest ones to explain.
So let's give us a scenario. Let's say you pick up a story right now and you want to have it in tomorrow in tomorrow's paper. You go to what happens?
You go to your news editor. Let's say I'm in the Irish Sun. I go to Neil Cotter or Fergus, and I say to them, "Listen, I've got a story," and they go, "You know, you can just tell by your enthusiasm." In fact, I have a way of working in a lot of papers using some 4-letter words, finding out if people are interested in the story or not, because at the end of the day, it has to land, and it has to be the kind of story that you will read tomorrow and talk about. And it's a competitive world. Newspapers are very competitive, and I suppose I had that efficiency of selling a story. And when I met Liam O'Brien on that course from RTÉ's Doc on One team, I said, "I've done an interview. I've met this guy who was Michael Jackson's driver, a guy called Ray O'Hara, and all the stories I heard from him and about Jackson's time in Ireland." I said, "This would be great," and he agreed with me. And Liam was right, because it's done very well.
What's in a documentary course, just briefly, for people who don't
know?
And this was
open
to the public. It was publicised.
It's a wonderful thing that RTÉ do. They're a public service broadcaster. They, I mean, the funny thing about it was is that, like, as an entertainment journalist, particularly with the Irish Independent, I was their entertainment editor for 4 years. All I did was stories about people's salaries, and I would be chasing Ryan Tuberty across a beach in Skerries. It happened, asking him about his salary at 8:30 in the morning.
With your tape recorder.
Ryan Tuberty turned up to do an outside broadcast in Skerries, and he didn't know that I lived in Skerries, so I thought, that's an easy one. So Ryan Tuberty's half asleep on the beach drinking a coffee, and over the sand dunes come me with my tape recorder asking him about salary cuts, right? So getting back to it was, these are the kind of stories I've been doing for years. So in a strange way, if RTÉ kind of hatched a plan as to how we can make someone who's writing about salaries and big name presenters, how they can actually interact, this journalist can interact with ordinary run-of-the-mill, not run-of-the-mill, but just normal RTÉ staff, guys that I'm ringing, guys that I was in contact with, the RTÉ documentary makers team. And when I did that documentary, I was just so full of admiration for those people, because they're staff at a public service broadcaster, and they're doing documentaries all the time. They make 40 documentaries a year, and they're going out, they're meeting members of the public around Ireland, and they're helping them to tell their story. And that's public service broadcasting, as far as I'm concerned.
And the things you learned on the course. So even you never made a documentary before. This
no,
your first
I've never
one.
Made a documentary before. I suppose you learn about logging, you learn about editing, you learn
What's
about
logging?
Yeah. Well, logging is the, you know, you go out, you do the interviews, they teach you about the equipment you're going to use, using professional equipment. And even about 2 years ago, I was famous because I was going around with a cassette tape. I was actually using old fashioned cassettes, and I was running out of places to buy them. And I met a girl from 2FM, and she said, "You're that guy from the Indo. You use a cassette. I heard about you. I didn't know yet those machines still existed." So I went into doing the documentary makers course, I bought a Zoom, and actually people think it's a stun gun, and I'm stunning. I could threaten celebrities with it. But I bought a Zoom digital recorder, but I got some really fabulous equipment from, and I was shown how to use it on the documentary makers course. And then, you know, I went out. There was a lot of people on that course, actually, people of all ages, and they kept asking, you know, how do you do it, and how do you do it? And one of the guys at the back, probably one of the producers who mixes the stuff, just saying, "Go out and do it." And I say that to anyone now who's listening to this show, because I had no idea about how to do or anything like this. If you've got a good story, go out and do it. You'll find your way around.
When you say go out and do it, what would you say to people if they haven't done a documentary course but have a story that they think would really make a good documentary? What would you say to them?
Work out what the story is and work out, has it got a connection like the Jackson thing to somebody very famous? Is it something very unique? Is it something that, for instance, RTÉ being a public service broadcast, you're interested in stories that aren't, maybe wouldn't be that commercial, maybe a commercial broadcaster wouldn't be into. So this, the list is kind of, there's a lot of boxes you have to tick, but good talkers and lots of voices, lots of great voices.
Which what you had on this particular documentary.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't just go. I mean, this is not just about Ray who drove him round. It's all the places. It's Paddy Dunning who runs Grouse Lodge Studios, which was the studio where Michael Jackson came to record in 2006. We visited Lawler's pub in Moat. Paul Lawler, the boss of that pub, and he was showing me where Jackson had drunk. We met all these people, lots of different voices, and Jumpin' Jacks, which is the clip at the start. We met the lady who runs Jumpin' Jack's bowling alley and play centre in Tullamore, and those voices, they all add to it.
It's based on the driver, of course. How did you come across him?
Well, this helped because I suppose I have a background in journalism. I come across Ray O'Hara a couple of years ago through Paddy Dunning. Paddy Dunning's an amazing guy. He runs Grouse Lodge Studios. He's put that studio there. All these bands come in. You know, Shirley Bassey, the Manic Street Preachers, REM have come in there. And what it is Ray is the driver. Ray is a cab driver, originally from Dublin, but he's based down in Moat, and he's the official driver. Now, the thing about it is, Ray O'Hara is he's a very good guy. And that's the reason why he wanted to get involved in this, because he had an experience of Michael Jackson for 6 months driving around, where Michael Jackson never mentioned plastic surgery, he never mentioned, you know, monkeys, he never mentioned any of this stuff, that he had a completely unique experience. But at the same time, Ray never wanted to kind of take advantage of that. I mean, he's a very, very, you know, quiet, cool guy. He doesn't, you know, whatever goes on in his cab, if you get into his cab tomorrow, God forbid Shane did something, Ray would never tell anyone about it. He's just a very
discreet.
He'd
never tell you about it.
He's never tell me about it. He's a very discreet guy, and he just had this amazing story. And I think that one of the most wonderful things about Michael Jackson's Irish Driver, and actually it gets repeated on Monday night at 6 p.m. on RTÉ1, is Jackson fans liked it. They embraced it. And I actually had met some Jackson fans in the course of doing the documentary, and the first thing they said to me is, so are you a fan of Michael Jackson?
Are you a fan of Michael Jackson?
I wasn't.
It's like you're whispering that now.
I wasn't. I was into it, but I was. But, you know, I said to them that I had REM played in the Olympia a couple of years ago, and I went five nights in a row, and I saw REM and the SFX years ago, and I'm the lead singer of the Blades would be quite frightened meeting me sometimes. I'm a big fan of the Blades too, but so I understand what it's like to be connected to music, where music has a tremendous, someone, an artist's music has a tremendous significance to you in your life, and that's what it was about. So I explained it to them that I wasn't a Jackson fan, but I could understand where they were coming from. And my God, when we brought the Jackson tracks into mix it, because I suppose for my band, you know, I'd mixed a lot of records and done music. We brought it into Tom Norton, who mixed it, and we played these Jackson songs. I mean, I had an idea like something like The Man in the Mirror, could go on the end. And we had lots of great suggestions as well from Sarah Blake on the documentary
team.
Well,
maybe about, is this
music,
the point where you start to listen to the lyrics maybe and start to understand a little bit more about Michael Jackson himself?
Yeah, I mean, this... Some of Michael Jackson's music I can kind of understand. And what I get from Ray, you know, so Ray was hard to look after him. And I think the reason the documentary is good, or that people like it really, is the fact that Ray was a cab driver, and he gets a call from Paddy Dunning to say, listen, from tomorrow you're driving around Michael Jackson, who in 2006 is the biggest superstar on the planet. And Ray makes the transition. You know, it's in the documentary where at a certain point they were driving around, and Michael Jackson said to Ray, Ray, do you mind if I sit in the front? And they sat in the front, and that's when the relationship kind of changed. And you know, it's you know, when Ray is talking about, you know, later on saying goodbye to Jackson and stuff, I mean, geez, there isn't a dry eye in the house. And you know, most of all, what comes across is Ray O'Hara's sincerity, and also just the way when, let's say, the news came out that Michael Jackson was in Westmeath, and you know, literally the world's media descended on it.
Did you go down?
I didn't at the time. No, but at the time, If you know, newspapers or whatever turned up, you know, the media turned up in Westmeath, the locals who didn't know Jackson were actually giving like the CNN guys false directions. They were saying Grouse Lodge is down that way, and they were pointing them in the wrong direction. They knew that Michael Jackson, he came to Ireland in 2006. You know, it was an amazingly weird place for him to come. What he found here was just time to be a kind of a normal dad, and I suppose that's what our documentary captures.
Do they talk about some of the normal things that he did?
Yeah, absolutely. Like trips to the cinema and stuff. And Ray tells a brilliant story that he got Jackson into a cinema down in Westmeath, and it was, you know, he got in and Ray got him in through the exit doors, and it was pitch dark and no one saw him, whatever, and it was going great. And Ray think this is great, like, and it was just Ray, no other security, just Ray O'Hara, right? And then in the middle of it, Michael gets up from the seat in the middle of the film, goes out to the kiosk and buys some popcorn for the kids and gives the woman behind the counter like €100 tip or something. And of course, everybody within a few minutes, everybody's swarming around the cinema or whatever. And somehow Ray gets him out of there. And, they're driving past the front of the cinema and there's like hundreds of people outside the front of the cinema waiting to see Michael Jackson.
Ray developed a relationship with them as well. And so did Paddy. How did that come about, that relationship? When did they start to see the change in Michael?
Well, in 2006, and the documentary kicks off, with Paddy Dunne getting a call from Grace, who was Michael Jackson's PA, saying she had a client who wanted to come and record in Ireland. And then it was revealed to Paddy that it was Michael Jackson, and it was a really difficult time for Michael Jackson. He'd come out of a child molestation case in the States, and his image and his reputation had been very badly damaged. He'd sold millions of records with things like Thriller, but he was going through a bit of a writer's block. He arrives over, he's used to Neverland, he ends up living in a converted cow shed in Grouse Lodge, but he loves it. And Paddy's wife is cooking him natural food. He's taking his kids out to the local play centre to jumping jacks. They're just doing every run of the mill, everyday kind of things. And after a while, Michael just finds his muse once again. That's the wonderful story, you know. God, like this an amazing story, you know, Paddy tells in the documentary about, you know, they were recording and they heard this kind of deep breathing. And they thought, my God, Michael runs out into the yard. He says to Paddy, it's, what's that noise? It sounds like dragons. And Paddy Dunning goes, listen, we don't have dragons. It sounds like dragons, Paddy. And it turned out to be these hot air balloons, you know, going across. And these people were looking down and they were going, Jesus, they didn't realise Michael Jackson was there.
Like Michael Jackson in the field.
There is a great story on the documentary as well about the Bastion Gallery in Athlone, another place we visited. Katie McKay, the owner down there, told me, Michael Jackson, it's an amazing little shop, the Bastion Gallery. If you've ever gone through Athlone, go into it. It's full of lovely stuff. And I think Paddy recommended Michael to go down there, so they closed the shop and Michael went in anyway, and he's in there looking at all the books, Michael Jackson with all the gear, and a tramp, a down and out guy, was walking along kind of outside on the street, and he kind of looks into the shop and there's Michael Jackson with his hat on, and this guy was probably thinking, I'm seeing things, I'm getting off to drink, I just think I've seen Michael Jackson in this closed shop looking at books, and it was Michael Jackson. That's the kind of crazy one of my favourite stories of the documentary. One that really got me going was Paddy Dunning. At one stage Michael wanted to meet Paddy Dunning's folks who were up in Crumlin. So they got into the car and they had some problem with the fuel cap, you know, and they were driving up and they couldn't fill the car full of petrol. So they're on that long road in the middle of Crumlin. This is 2006. Michael Jackson was the biggest superstar on the planet, and they're running out of petrol on that long road through the middle of Crumlin. And Paddy said it came very close to the car stopping and Michael Jackson pushing a car through the centre of Crumlin. Now, if you can imagine, let's say, Beyonce pushing a car through the centre of like Fairview or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I heard that, I just thought, I'm going to make a documentary about this. Nothing's going to stop me. And there, thanks to RTE and the Doc on One team, there it is. You know?
Put your headphones on, because I have a woman on the line who has a Michael Jackson story. Hello, caller.
Hello, tis only me, Shay. Tis Brenda.
Hello, Brenda. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Shay.
Where are you? Why aren't you here to give out to Ken?
Yeah, do you know what? I'd love to be beside Ken, because the enthusiasm he has for everything in life, but particularly this documentary, would genuinely make me tune in on Monday night. It sounds brilliant, Ken.
Thanks very much.
Well done.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, seriously, well done. All I can say is I am under a table in a secret location in Carlow. Okay?
This is not the time for the comment I was going to make, but yeah, keep going.
And all will be revealed tomorrow on the Mooney Show. But now, I was working, as you know, on the Jerry Ryan Show for many, many years, and very lucky to do so. But Michael Jackson, do you remember, Ken? He played in the RDS in the
late 80s. Yeah. That's right.
And if you remember the Virgin Megastore along the quays in Dublin, not there anymore, obviously, but they had a DJ booth in the centre of the Virgin Megastore. But anyway, the PR from the Virgin Megastore got a call to say Michael wanted to go shopping with his entourage. Could they close the store down and not let the press know? So they were there and they were kind of going, God, we'd get some publicity out of it. We want Michael to come shopping. So what do we do? So the PR lady phoned me, brought me into the store before it closed. I hid down behind the DJ box at an hour, bursting to go to the toilet, but we forget about that, in the Virgin Megastore. And they cleared out, the security men came in, they cleared all the customers out, most of the staff were cleared out, his people came in. I'm going to be caught. And then eventually he came in with his entourage, a very large entourage, who all grabbed baskets. They went around the store. At the time, the mobile phone technology was, do you remember the big car kits?
Oh, yeah.
Like, huge one. I walked around Virgin Megastore, behind Michael Jackson, live on 2FM, going... And he's now bought a Lionel Richie poster. He's put in a Diana Ross CD into his basket. And people were kind of looking at me. The Irish security member going, no, she's all right. So eventually, because we were on the radio, all the press came down. And if you know the layout of Virgin Megastore, right, there's the lift up to the second floor. And I was down at the bottom floor. And there was glass doors behind me. And behind me in the glass doors, all the photographers and journalists and everything had come down to try and catch a glimpse of Michael Jackson shopping. I'm at the bottom of the escalator and Michael is coming down the escalator and he speaks to me. Sorry, I need a moment. Right? And do you know what he says to me? Do you know? Do you
no.
want to know, Shane?
Yes, we'd love to know.
What? Okay, good. He says, oh my God, look at all the press, look at all the media. And I go, God, Michael, I'm not press, I'm not media, I'm working here in the store. He goes, uh-huh. I said, Michael, you're very welcome to Ireland. We're all so looking forward to your concerts. Thank you very much for coming. And you know what he said to me? He said to me, little old me, he said, yip, it's been a pretty good day so far. And that was my conversation with Michael Jackson.
You had one. Yeah. And how many people could say they had a conversation with Michael Jackson?
Yeah. Yip, it's been a pretty good day so far.
I'm
so glad. That story for the 100th time.
And, so we're not going to hear what you're doing until tomorrow, so it's a big secret, but you're in County Carlow.
No.
You're in County Carlow.
I'm in and I'm talking to you and I'm ready to talk to you for the rest of your life and the rest of the programme, Shay. But Ken, your enthusiasm is wonderful. I'm so excited to hear it, really.
I'll see you next week.
You've sold it to me.
I'll see you next week at the Vinyl Night Nollies and Scaries, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great. What records are you bringing?
I'll bring me old Blades albums, I think.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, Brenda. We'll talk to you a little bit later on.
Take care.
So everybody has a Michael Jackson story. Yeah. So I'm sorry, Michael Jackson passed away 6 years ago. Do you remember where he was? Or where you were? 5 years ago. 2009, I think.
No, I don't. But I mean, it's you know, we have the RT newscaster announcing the news and Ray's reaction to that at the time. Well, one of the funniest things in the documentary that Ray told me was Michael Jackson was a huge fan of Bertie Ahern. Believe it or not.
No, I never heard that before.
I was out doing something for the Indo when I was at Gayburn Book Launch. And who was there but Bertie? So I was coming out and Bertie was there and I was there with a tape recorder. The Indo later on that evening got in these pictures of me, you know, waving this recorder into Bertie's face.
Asking really hard
political
questions.
And they said to me, what he was. They rang me up and said, you were interviewing him. What were we interviewing him? I was saying, did you know Michael Jackson was a big fan of yours? And it turned out that Oliver Barry had brought Bertie down to Cork when he played down there. And at the time, this is what Bertie told me, that he was, at the time, I think Bertie was a minister, certainly in my memory, who sorted out a lot of strikes. He was the guy who sent
in. Yeah.
And he said that Jackson maybe had that memory of him as a, you know, as a kind of a fixer. And so Ray O'Hara said that every time Michael Jackson was watching TV in Ireland and he saw Bertie on the screen, he'd go, that's Bertie, he's a nice guy. So one of the bizarre things that came out, you know, which, you know, the best story of all this documentary is that Ray O'Hara charged Michael Jackson the nothing more than he would any other customer gets into his cab.
He just put the meter on.
And he didn't charge him anything more. That says a lot about Ray O'Hara and maybe a lot about why Michael Jackson really liked Ray O'Hara.
Well, I have to agree with
Brenda.
You have huge enthusiasm for your subject. It's nice to see you out of the context of the tape recorder coming out as well.
Right. I'll be out there asking you about your salary there in about 15 minutes.
Security are taking you out. You can ask me about my salary all day long. There won't be a story in that, Ken. The documentary is going to be broadcast again because it was broadcast before at 6 p.m. Bank Holiday Monday the 27th. This Monday at 6 p.m. on RT Radio 1.
A big thank to Q102. They're going to play it over Christmas as well. Dave Kelly, they love it and they've embraced it, and it's the great. And RT have made a documentary. Lots of radio stations are going
to
play it.
And if you want to make a documentary out there, you should come and do it as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely,
you can listen back to it on a podcast on the RT website.
It's on the RT website. I pay tribute to the Doc on One team. This is what they do. They make great documentaries that win awards all over the place.
Thanks,
and
but
rightly
that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. That's our job. That's what we get paid for. So, look, Ken Sweeney, showbiz editor for The Sun. Thanks very much for coming in.